Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is a perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender, and there's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through. We'll fight to the death. We are soldiers. We are soldiers.
Calling the Bard's Logic Political Talk, part of the Growing Conservative Conversation, and also part of the Patriot Journalist Network. And you can find the Patriot Journalist Network by going to www.patriotjournalist.com. And tonight we will be discussing PBS's airing of a puff piece on partial birth abortion with your tax dollar support. So join us tonight. Myself, the host, along with James Neighbors, Dan Gray, and also Cindy Todd. And we will be talking about the broadcast of PBS airing After Tiller, a documentary on doctors who perform later-term abortion. And this is a letter that was shared to us from Bill Marshall. This week, I was made aware of PBS plans to air a program glorifying late-term abortions and the doctors that perform them, entitled After Tiller. The program seems to paint a picture of how heroic these doctors are because of the moral dilemma they personally encounter in these cases. If these doctors were truly faithful to the oath they take, then there would be no dilemma. To take the life of an innocent unborn child is wrong according to God and what he has revealed to us. It is not up to them or anyone else to decide such a thing. If these doctors like Dr. Tiller and the federal government will listen to the wisdom of God, they would have no moral dilemma. And this program will air locally, and this is where Bill is from, Mr. Bill Marshall is from locally, on September 6th. In order to facilitate contacting our local affiliates to express our outrage, I'm forwarding the following contact information. Please call them at 216-916-6100 and navigate to programming or email the program director peg.neeson, and that's N-E-E-S-O-N at ideastream.org. And also the program is also being shown online until October 1st. So call and email your protest. And we have the email there on the description here of the show. And tonight we have first on our guest, and that is Dustin. Thank you very much, Dustin, for calling to the show. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Great. And I'd like to thank Cindy for, I guess, getting in contact with you for you to come on the show to talk about tonight's topic. So we'll go ahead and open the mic up to you and tell us your thoughts.
Sure, yeah. So as you pointed out to your listeners, CBS showed After Tiller on Monday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And the movie follows the four, and now it's five, but at the time four, late-term abortion doctors that are left in America after the shooting of Dr. George Tiller in 2009. PBS aired the movie, the documentary. They said it facilitated discussion, which they say is what the goal of the two filmmakers was. But as my colleague Kirsten Anderson reported for LifeSite News, which is where I'm a D.C. correspondent, their goal is to have people sympathize with and empathize with the late-term abortionist in the film. So obviously, this is, you know, just on a cultural level, this is bothersome because PBS is a large outlet, watched by a lot of, you know, average Americans, if you will, not people who already know where they stand on abortion. Even worse than that, though, is that PBS receives millions of taxpayer dollars every year. I reached out to some of their communication staff, and I'm looking up the number now in a piece I did today for LifeSite News. It was $51 million in 1 year. And I quote, "The funds were used for content, curriculum-based media and services for children, the internet connection system that allows public television stations to receive and share programming and other mission-driven work." But $51 million, 8.6% of their total revenues, came from the taxpayers. And yet, wow, here they are showing this pro-abortion film. Another one of their communications people told me that this abortion is illegal, and therefore they considered this part of having a discussion. And so I asked them if they had any plans to put up a pro-life film, and they said there was no plan for that. And if you look but if you look back to 2009, they had right after Dr. Tiller was shot, they did a whole segment where they declared Bill O'Reilly from Fox News to be a domestic terrorist, and they asked if pro-lifers were going to be the next domestic terrorism and the harassment of doctors, et cetera, et cetera. And then their parent company, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, their ombudsman asked, you know, examined the segment and said, you know, I wish they'd made some changes, but mostly they did a really good job of showing that Bill O'Reilly fomented hatred against George Tiller. So I asked the communications person, can you tell me an example of when you guys have done something that is absolutely pro-life, no question? And she said, well, many of our shows have covered it. I said, great. How about a specific example? And she said, well, here's an example of where we had a co-interview and head-to-head op-eds with a leading pro-abortion, a leading abortion supporter, and a leading pro-lifer, which to me isn't the same thing as giving carte blanche discussion, if you will, from the purely pro-abortion perspective. And just to wrap up, yesterday they had a panel discussion about this that included one of the abortion doctors, one of the directors of the film, and a woman who works as a reporter for MSNBC, and she's openly pro-abortion. And they said things like pro-lifers demonize women who get late-term abortions. They said that there's no link between abortion and breast cancer and abortion and mental illness. And it was just a big love fest among these people. So I wrote about this in several articles and a couple of blog posts for Hot Air and for LifeSite News. That's kind of my long summary of the whole situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wrote a paper in college for the capstone course, or capstone course for a minor that I did. It was a peace studies minor. We were able to write on pretty much any topic as long as it dealt with issues of violence or nonviolence. And the paper I wrote was about abortion, and pretty much the title was, you know, something like, abortion seen as an issue of violence, because I don't think that it's really seen through that lens very often. I mean, you take some of the things that a lot of the liberals are against when it comes to treating prisoners and things of that nature, but they're okay with the way that babies are aborted and the atrocities on those. And just to show, you know, a lot of the hypocrisy that goes along with that.
Well, and there really is a lot of hypocrisy. And I have to give PBS credit for getting back to me, because, you know, two different communications arms to get back to me. So I give them credit for that. But other than that, they have done nothing to show that they want to use the tax dollars that they receive in an even-handed fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's extremely problematic. Never mind, you know, ignoring the cultural aspect of this, because, again, you know, if they were completely private organization, you know, MSNBC has the freedom to promote abortion all day long. But PBS receives taxpayer money, and that's extremely problematic that they're taking this divisive issue that they admitted is extremely touchy and only show one side. And again, the, the whole panel was all pro-abortion people. And when they were asked questions, like I asked them in, on the Google Plus chat, I asked, and the moderator relayed the question, I asked, why aren't you, why didn't you show the abortion procedure? Now, I haven't watched the film, but I made a guess. And she said, well, we want to respect the privacy of the patients. And we asked one of the counselors to explain the process at the beginning of the film. And then what the doctor who was on, Dr. Robinson, said, well, all that would be shown is a life, is a stillborn fetus. That wouldn't, you know, add anything. It would just kind of be, it wouldn't add any value, which I think we can all agree. Whether or not we support holding graphic images up on the sidewalks, we can all agree that seeing the reality of abortion, as explained by a former abortionist to Congress, it's not just a stillborn baby. This is a baby that usually has head crushed or have other physical deformities as a result of the abortion that's done, especially in the late term.
Right, certainly, and you know, I watched some of the film, but I mean, it's pretty much the same, you know, I would think, throughout. Of course, they're, you know, trying to, you know, put it in the worst case scenarios and what these doctors go through. Of course, they start off with the 911 call, with at least the trailer to 911 call of you know, Tiller getting shot. You know, it's kind of as if he was a martyr of sorts.
Well, and from their perspective, of course, he is. He was a God-fearing man who had compassion for his patients, is what they may actually believe. And I think I think everyone who's listening can agree that it was wrong to shoot him. You know, that's one of the big differences between the pro-life side and the pro-abortion side. When live action does their undercover filming, the pro-abortionists just argue against it or they ignore it. Or as live action might have found a couple of months ago, they say, oh, we got the person left, and the person hasn't left. Whereas when something happens on the pro-life side, we denounce people who violate our standards. You know, we don't live in a country where it's a dictatorship, we don't have any choice. We have the choice to elect people and influence the process and change laws and change culture. So the idea that, you know, pro-lifers are harassing people is always argued in Manchester, New Hampshire, for a buffer zone, and yet police reports show that there were calls made to the police but no arrests, or very, very few arrests. So this is hardly the threat that they're making it out to be. But again, this gets spread all over the mainstream media. The Wonk blog over at the Washington Post has had a couple of pieces related to this. You know, so we have to fight back against it as much as possible.
So certainly, and that's when I'll go ahead and reiterate you know, the phone number that at least, you know, I've got in the letter, and that's 216-916-6100. And the program director, I guess her name is Peg Neeson, and that's her email is peg.neeson, which is N-E-E-S-O-N, at ideastream.org. So take that. And, of course, you know, you can, as I said, you could see the video up until October 1st. Not that it's a video I relish watching, but of course for folks to, you know, be educated on, you know, what they're doing and the best way to combat that. and unfortunately, you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword. You don't want to give them the rating or the hits or anything of them watching the show because, you know, of course, that's what they thrive on. But we still probably would need to be able to, you know, watch parts that at least in order to get. I mean, we know what it's about, you know, but you know, to get more meat, I guess, as you say, in the argument.
Well, and one of the even worse things, which I forgot to mention about this whole video, is not the showing itself, but if you go on their website, and I believe it's the standard for it. So POV, point of view, is the PBS affiliate that is putting all these puts documentaries up. So everything they're doing for After Tickler is nothing special. It's just what they do for the documentaries. But as part of it, they're going to have online material for teachers and community leaders to bring to their students and ask them to have discussions. And you know, after watch, for example, and you can see this in one of the articles that I wrote last Friday for LifeSite News. The materials are publicly available on their website. You get asked a question like, and I don't have it in front of me, but something along the lines of, after this watching this movie, what do you think the discussion needs more of? And it gives you three options, you know, empathy, understanding, so forth and so on. And their citations, I saw several citations for Guttmacher, which we all know is was the research arm of Planned Parenthood, and is now a pro-abortion research group, that while it does tend to do good research, still has an extremely biased perspective. So it's not even the video that I think is the worst part. I think it's actually the push on this beginning of the school year that's going to be, you know, promoted in classrooms and across communities and discussions. So I think that's even worse than the video itself being shown.
Yeah, very good point. And I've got some call screening to do, so while I do so, I'm going to bring in one of our other panelists here, and that is Dan Gray. I also see James and Cindy on the line, as well as callers. But if anyone is listening to the show and you'd like to chime in tonight, just give us a call at 347-945-7428 if you'd like to be a part of tonight's show. Again, give us a call at 347-945-7428 and push the 1 on your number dial if you'd like to get into the show. So without any further ado, I will open up your mic, Dan. Thank you very much for coming to the show. How are you?
Oh, got a wicked headache. I'm 17 hours into my 20-hour day, and you know what? There's no point in complaining about it. We all have stuff to deal with.
I spent the earlier part of the evening.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, bringing that up, just kind of a program note. Normally we do extended periods on the show, but unfortunately, especially with the content of tonight's show, we definitely could go into 3, maybe even 4 hours, and perhaps we'll do a second show later on about this, since it will be airing to October 1st. So perhaps we'll have some aftermath show on it. But unfortunately, I have a procedure that I have to have done tomorrow myself.
Oh, dear.
So I will not be able to be up real late tonight. So
prayers are with you, Robert. Whatever that procedure is, hopefully everything will work out just fine for you. You're very important to the movement for liberty. I want to just start off by saying, and this may be the headache.
Thank you, Dan.
You're welcome. I do not agree entirely that it was entirely wrong to shoot that abortion doctor. I hate to say that because I am a law-abiding guy, and I never advocate violence. But let's take it away from abortion and just say that there's a child molester. No, a child murderer. A murderer, period. And you see them murdering, and the authorities will do nothing, and they're about to murder another. So morally, well, we know legally it's wrong, but morally, is it entirely wrong? If you had the chance to shoot a Hitler, a Pol Pot, somebody who was a concentration camp guard, would you do it? I'm unclear. I really have to say that I'm unclear on that, and that's a shame. The legacy of Tiller, the baby killer, is Gosnell, a modern-day Mengele from Philadelphia, where I grew up. not far from where I live. This man was convicted of murder, not any abortions. He was convicted of murdering babies that were born. He was convicted of murdering women that came to him for help. He pushed poor women who were in distress to murder their own babies. And then he murdered babies of these women. For those who are, you know, I don't care if you're squeamish, and it does my head and my stomach no good to even think of this, much less to mention it, but a late-term abortion involves pushing a syringe, a needle, into the skull of a baby that could live outside the womb, and sucking the brains out and crushing the skull, and then dismembering with large forceps, kind of like hemostats, or for those of you who smoke dope, roach clips, long pliers, and pulling their body parts apart, pulling their legs and arms off, the very definition of cruel and unusual punishment. Now, I have a religious point of view, and they'll always say that anyone who's against religion is some sort of religious fundamentalist. I'm not only not a fundamentalist, but my argument that they cannot counter is it's a constitutional issue of liberty. The Constitution guarantees that no one shall be deprived of life without due process. First, there has to be a crime. There has to be evidence and a charge of a crime. There has to be a trial and a jury that convicts somebody, a jury of their peers. The very definition of an innocent person is a baby, whether they're quite yet born or not. They haven't had the chance to prove that they're going to be another Albert Schweitzer or another Joseph Mengele. We don't know if they're going to be a waste, a useless person. We don't know if they're going to be someone who invents and inspires and changes the entire world for the good. We don't know, and we'll never know. And Gosnell fella, this evil man in Philadelphia, was murdering mostly black babies. Most people don't realize this, but in the inner cities where most of the abortions take place, it is as high as 50% of all abortions in the black community are, of all pregnancies, end in abortion. That's the numbers out of New York City in the last couple of years, 50%. You want to talk about a genocide? Okay? I just cannot understand how anyone can just say, well, it's choice. It's choice. You know, you have the choice not to have sex. You have the choice to use any number of birth control methods. Under Obamacare, under the Affordable Care Act, you have the ability to be paid or to have this paid for. Almost every single different kind of birth control you'd want, short of abortifacient, is clearly covered. And even the Hobby Lobby case did not argue against 21, I believe it was, different forms of birth control, just the ones that kill babies. Even the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, when Roe v. Wade was passed, said that if human life was ever defined as existing prior to birth, then the entire so-called privacy issue between a woman and a doctor, which is entirely what Roe v. Wade is based on. That's it. There's nothing else except a woman and her doctor, a man and his doctor, anyone and their doctor has the right to privacy. That's what they said is a right that somehow in the Constitution, we've never seen it there, that becomes entirely moot. By the way, speaking of politics, President Obama, when he was in the Illinois legislature, voted mostly present, so he'd be able to take any kind of stance he wanted for political gain later on down the road. That's simply analysis, folks. It's not a fact. It's just a fact that he voted present and then proceeded to work both sides of the issue whenever he thought it was to his political advantage. That's a fact. And he's got no core that we can see. But this particular fella did push and sponsor a bill. He was adamant that newborns, survivors of abortion, any baby that managed not to get killed should be denied care. He fought to deny them care. That is what the man who is now in the Oval Office said. By the way, our guest is and Robert are just a little bit incorrect about one thing, which is ratings. You can watch that PBS program and then lambaste the editors and anyone else you want with the truth, having seen the program yourself, without affecting their ratings at all. Ratings are based entirely on Nielsen ratings, except for those times where any independent pollster might decide, let's say for a Super Bowl or for special events, to call people and ask them, you know, to do polling. So if no one calls you and asks you, it means you're not counted as a viewer one way or the other. You want to watch the program, go ahead, watch it, take notes. That way when you do contact the editor, when you write letters to other publications, when you post online, you're going to be able to speak not just because you heard some people on a radio show talk about it, but because you saw it with your own eyes, and then you did a little research to find out the truth. Everything that we're saying here, do not take our word for it any more than you would take PBS's word for it. You can find this stuff out very, very easily. My solution is really simple. Cut all government funding of public broadcasting and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, PBS. Let the marketplace decide. And I think the marketplace would decide that they want brilliant BBC series. We love some of that British detective stuff, the spy stuff. Oh, it's just Downton Abbey. I'm not a huge fan. My wife watches it. I go like, you know, the production values on this are awesome. It's very, very well done, you know. Great. I have no doubt that that would be successful. I want to just finish up real quick, Robert.
Sorry about that, Dan. But I do have a caller that I was reading the letter from tonight in the beginning of the show, and we do have Bill Marshall on the line, and so I will open up his mic.
Go ahead.
And we'll have – thank you very much, Bill, for coming to the show. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Nice to have me.
Yes, it is.
My big concern is the hypocrisy in this abortion as opposed to other issues in the death of an unborn child. And that is if a person in a vehicle would run a red light or driving while intoxicated or whatever the case might be, as long as the driver of the one car is in fault that kills the mother and the unborn child in another car, that person would be accused of vehicular homicide on two counts, not one. So, in other words, they would kill the mother, and then they would kill the unborn child, which would be the second count of vehicular homicide. Now, if they consider that unborn child a viable human to come across with a verdict of vehicular homicide in the case of that instance, then why is not in the medical profession the doctors or even the lawmakers, for that matter, aren't they viewed as either murderers or accessories to murder because of the killing of an unborn child?
Well, there's a lot of state laws that are hypocritical on that. I've done some reporting in Louisiana, for example. And then this is where any state that has feticide laws gives an exception for abortion. And it's entirely hypocritical. But there's a woman, I believe, in Iowa. I could be wrong. I just reported on this the other day. She is being charged with feticide, and she's being charged with neglect. So they're not sure. So they're pretty sure that she bore the child. But if she didn't, she tried to kill it using some abortion pills. It didn't work. Killed the baby at approximately 28 to 30 weeks gestation, which is a late-term abortion. So she's being charged under the feticide laws. And pro-lifers are frustrated because it's hypocrisy. And the feminists and pro-abortion people are upset because they believe this undermines abortion. So hopefully Your point, sir, about the hypocrisy of feticide laws, this keeps getting raised every few months, and hopefully it will become a major issue, especially as America has become more pro-life. If I may jump to the point that was made about shooting Dr. Tiller, if someone is killing people in the traditional sense of the word, so, you know, born people, we have laws against that and already in existence. If we go to shoot an abortion doctor or bomb an abortion clinic, and we think, hey, we're justified, the law shouldn't touch us because we're justified morally, then that opens a huge Pandora's box as to who can kill who.
Meanwhile, we also need to have our laws in place.
We have laws in place that allow, prevent someone from killing somebody. We have the laws in place for that. This is why we need to change the culture and the laws, not advocate or even remotely support killing of an abortion doctor.
Oh, I in no way endorse that type of. In fact, if you read that into my comment, I'm very sorry. I certainly didn't.
That was me, Bill. I was the one who said I wasn't sure, and quite frankly, even though I am 100% law-abiding and against violence, if a terrorist comes to my town or a meth head who is threatening somebody and law enforcement refuses to do anything about it, I will do what I need to do to protect my family and to protect innocent people in my neighborhood, and especially children. Luckily, we have a nation of laws, but I would not count on the laws as with the people we have in charge of running our law enforcement establishment, people like Eric Holder, when ISIS comes to town or the abortion doctor or anyone who kills innocents just because, I would not count on the law enforcement to do their job unless they decide to disobey the orders they're given. Right now, we have a lot of really good border patrolmen who want to do their job according to the Border Patrol Union, and they are not allowed to do their job, and they follow those orders. They don't go after the narco-terrorists. And that's a huge crime. Right now, Eric Holder is responsible for releasing hundreds of people who are murderers or, and we're talking of adults, murderers or accomplices to murder as illegal aliens into society with absolutely no idea where they're going or what they're going to do. And we've had Althea Shaw on this program. We know what happens when a murderer is let loose. They murder. Mm-hmm. So I am not advocating that anyone go after an abortion doctor. I'm just saying if I see somebody doing something, a bully, and I report it to the authorities and it continues, and the authorities condone and abet that murder, I'm not going to just say that strategy would not have worked in Nazi Germany. Provided that we retake the reins of power in this country and we make this country a just and constitutional and proper society the way it is intended to be, then law enforcement will be going after people who commit crimes, including crimes against unborn babies. But if we go much further down the road we're on, law enforcement is going to be the ones doing that. And that may be a lot of people who aren't in law enforcement right now, but who might get out of prison and put on a uniform and a badge. So I am still morally unclear as to whether there was any great wrong done. And by the way, folks, I'm not a violent guy. If I ever do anything violent, I will not hide the fact. I will own up to it. And if prison is where I end up, you don't do it if it's not worth prison.
Well, at least you're consistent. A lot of people break laws and then try to say, well, I was doing it because of my belief. Well, for right or wrong, laws exist, and you have to follow them or face the consequences of violating those laws.
I think what Dan was saying, and then I want to bring in another caller, and then we've got James and Cindy I'd like to bring in the line as well, or other panelists, is, and I'm not trying to speak for Dan, but just to bring this up before I bring Ed in, is that I believe he's saying there was, we're not talking about a legal dilemma. I think he was talking about he didn't see a moral dilemma.
Exactly right, Bob.
In the shooting of the doctor, a moral dilemma, which of course different in a lot of cases than a legal one. But I'm going to bring in Ed. Thank you very much, Ed, for calling into the show. How are you tonight? Area code 407. This is Ed.
Well, Bob, dead air is not good. I don't hear Ed.
I don't hear Ed. I'll keep your mic open, Ed, and then when you're ready to come in, go ahead. So let's go ahead and bring it back to Bill. before we bring see if Ed can come in. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, you brought up the Eric Holder thing here about you know what he by choice. He chooses, you know, he chooses to either ignore or support different things as to their liking. And I say they, coming from the Oval Office into directly Eric Holder's office, because he doesn't do much without the approval or disapproval of Barack Obama, and it just. Well, we're not. This goes a little ways from the abortion issue, but it goes to his Eric Holder's mindset. And from what I understand, he's got somewhere in the area of 40 investigators in Ferguson, Missouri, still on this unfortunate situation that happened there with the shooting of the 18-year-old boy. But yet, the terrorists that are coming out of Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minnesota, as near as anyone can count, there's few to nil investigators up there looking into the possibility of homegrown terrorists coming out of there. There have already been three killed in Iraq or Syria of these people that have come out of there, the Americans. American citizens, Somali at one time, Somalis that came here as refugees, I suppose. But anyway, there's a mix-up in the priorities of the where things go and how things are handled through the through Eric Holder's office and directly, I feel, from the Oval Office.
But how does that relate to PBS showing Tiller? I mean, we've swung a little bit away from that topic.
Well, I guess it doesn't, in as much as what we were talking about was the Eric Holder getting into it as far as you know the justification of certain things as far as abortion and then because of.
I'll tell you what, if you don't mind, Bill. The reason that it does definitely relate, and I apologize for taking us off topic a little bit, the status, I won't even dignify them with the a title of progressive, because there can be honest progressives who want to progress, who brought us, you know, the 40-hour work week and no child labor and worker safety rules. I mean, these are all some decent things, some of them. But statists, people who want power like that, they have no respect for innocence. They have no respect for individuals. They have no respect for women. They have no respect for diversity or liberty. Only for issues and groups that promote power of the state, which means the individuals who run the state at the expense of those persons. This is exactly why statists support that propaganda arm of PBS, and why they support, you have to ask yourself for this cognitive dissonance, this disconnect between how can feminists support abortion? How can feminists support Islam, radical Islam, ISIS? How can they say this is a good thing? Those guys are all right. They don't really mean it, because they're not interested in supporting women. They're not interested in supporting babies. They're not interested in supporting the individual's right to make a choice. They want raw power over other people, and they just use these words. PBS does not believe, even though some of the people there may be honest in the sense that they do believe what they say, ultimately they don't believe a word that they're saying as an organization. They say stuff that is not true, that is demonstrably easily proven to be completely false, and they do this for a reason, which is to bolster their own base, to confuse and confound anyone who's against them, and basically to call us the worst kind of things. We're the bad guys. It's not Tiller the baby killer who's a bad guy. It's not Kermit Gosnell, this modern-day Mengele who dismembered babies, who killed people, who's in jail for murder now in Pennsylvania, which has no anti-abortion laws about killing babies who are unborn. But he's in jail for murder. They're saying these guys are the good guys. They're okay. It's us, the ones who oppose their statist ideas. We're the terrorists. We're the bad guys who want to just take everything from those poor people who want to make a choice. And unfortunately, there are a lot of people who are either gullible or who have been brainwashed through no fault of their own, because this is all they've heard in the schools. This is all they hear on television. This is everything they get. So until they actually come face-to-face with this and are confronted with it in their own life or the life of a family or close friend, that's what changed me from being a progressive. The very first nick in the armor, the very first thing that made me stop just believing the stuff that I was brought up with was abortion. When a woman I knew, who was my ex-girlfriend, got together with my ex-best friend, and they made a baby, and no one knew what to do about it, and they were seriously considering abortion, we talked this out and had to come to the logical conclusion that this young person, yet to be born, had nothing to do with it. They'd done nothing wrong. They didn't deserve punishment. They deserved a life like anyone else. That baby was born, and it changed everything for me. And I'm just unwilling to accept all the moral relativity that outlets like PBS are willing to put out. You know, they say nice things about the terrorists and about the illegal aliens and about the corrupt politicians. They say the nicest things about FDR and all the rest. Oh, they're just really great guys, and they're liars.
Margaret Sanger, too. Margaret Sanger, the one PBS says
Margaret
that there's some controversy surrounding her.
Oh, yeah.
She was a racist. And she was a racist eugenicist whose ideas were adopted by the Nazis. Margaret Sanger is one of the worst human beings of the 20th century in terms of her negative influence on the world. And she's held up as some kind of icon, this saint. She was nothing of the kind. She was an evil woman.
So
and I'm talking
here's my question,
much.
If I may throw it out there. Everyone,
real quick, Dustin, I've got a couple more folks.
I apologize. I didn't mean to dominate too much.
Oh, no, that's okay. We just got other folks to come in. But first, I want to see if Ed's on the line, and then I definitely want to get James and Cindy in. But first, I want to say hello to some folks who I know are listening out there, and that is from the New Radio Network, and that network is the CPR Worldwide Media. So welcome, and thank you for listening to the show at CPRWorldwideMedia.com. So it's great to have you folks there listening, and welcome. And so, Ed, I wanted to see if you were on the line. Okay, Ed, I have your mic open, so if you just want to chime in and interrupt us at some point, go ahead. First, I'm going to go ahead and bring James in, and then Cindy, I see you there. I'll be bringing you all in as well. I also see Kelly, and if anyone else would like to chime in, it's 347-945-7428. So without any further ado, I will bring in James. Thank you very much, James, for calling to the show. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine. How are you doing tonight, Robert?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. I got a little nerves, to be honest, going on about what I got going on tomorrow, but this is helping. So go ahead, James.
Well, you know, sorry, Dan touched on one thing I was going to touch on, too, and that was, you know, Margaret Sanger. I mean, this woman was her goal in her life was to exterminate all blacks. She was that sick and twisted type of person. You know, she created Planned Parenthood to do this. And then for PBS to go and air some show like this after the damage that's been done to not just the United States, you know, 50, I think it's up to 57 million and counting, and you know, and that's not even including the fact that how this idea infected the UN and is done all over the world, you know, by the billions, and you know, the fact that the public broadcasting station that's funded by our money that would air something like that, that at least, even if it's by the slimmest margin of people, would be offended by something like that, you would think they would have a little more viewer and donor sensitivity. You know, but, you know, Margaret Sanger's goal, and this is where the whole thing with the with Planned Parenthood and abortion on demand, it boils down to a word that a lot of people like to cast aside today in today's politically correct society, and it's a very simple word, and that word is evil. And I think the sooner that people in general can recognize that actual evil and evil people exist, such as Margaret Sanger and people that would support that industry, as soon as they can recognize, you know, that there is actually, you know, there are evil people, there are, you know, evil things happen because of those people. And as soon as people can recognize that, and I'm not even talking about a religious sense, although, you know, if that's how you believe, then you need to really remember that there really is evil in this world. But regardless of that, even in an atheist world, there's evil. And this abortion on demand thing that's exterminated, you know, at least 56 million lives in the United States, I mean, you know, dwarfs anything that that Hitler or Stalin ever pulled off. And, you know, the fact that anybody could call it a right, you know, I would think that their right would be to be responsible with the biological functions of their body.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be a right. That is your right. And but not the right to determine life or death over another human being. I don't choose to exercise that right except for in extreme self defense. And fortunately, I've never had to, you know, never come to a situation where that's been necessary. And I hope I never do. Just the notion that this could be something that's considered a right when it's extinguishing another life, you know, in the tens of millions, you know, it's just amazing. And I went and did a little research, and at 37%, and, you know, Margaret Sanger would probably be very, very proud, because 37% of all abortions in the United States were performed on African Americans. That's the tune of 20,720,000 lives that never came into being. Well, if you go by the 2012 census of 44,456,000 African Americans in the United States, add 20 million, almost 21 million onto that, and you look at the implications of that. You're talking one-third of the population that would be alive today had that never been legalized is snuffed out to never see the light of day. And that is just, I don't care where you're coming from, that is, there's something on a society level, on the survival of your civilization level, where that is inexcusable and should never be tolerated.
James, thank you very much. I do see some other calls, but first I want to bring Cindy in, because she's the one who got us these guests tonight, and thank you again, Cindy. And there, she wants to get some opportunity to speak with them before they would have to go for the evening. But everyone else, of course, lines are still open, and I do see some other folks who I'd like to chime in. But first, Cindy, thank you very much for coming to the show. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you, Dustin, and thank you, Bill, so much for coming on tonight. Really appreciate it. Bill and I found out today that we are actually connected somehow through my father. My dad and Bill and his friend Frank, and I guess you must have known Ronnie Vincent too. They were all really good friends during high school.
I did.
I cannot believe it. So you knew Ronnie?
Yes, I did.
That's awesome. Well, Dustin and Bill, I want to ask you both this question. We've sort of danced around this a little bit, but I want to come to it. Here in DeLand, in our DeLand library, many years ago, a team of ladies came and showed a film. This whole film was advocating a type of genocide through abortion on African and Indian babies. They were claiming that there is overpopulation, and that was the whole cause of all the starvation and everything that was going on the African continent and in India. Well, you and I think you guys and I will agree to this. It has nothing to do with the population. It has everything to do with the leadership of those countries. They're all pretty much dominated by either communist dictators or Muslim dictators, one or the other. And it is their leadership that is keeping them in poverty, not the amount of babies that they're having. But anyway, these ladies were basically advocating this genocide, and they were saying that, you know, we had to work on population control. And then, of course, you know, I'm sure, Dustin, you've probably – have you ever covered Agenda 21, Dustin? Are you there, Dustin?
Yeah, I see Dustin on the line.
He might be muted. Anyway, I was wondering if he covered.
I muted myself.
I don't have
I'm an idiot.
I muted
myself. Sorry.
Okay, I do that too.
I know a little bit about Agenda 21. I'm not overly familiar with it in depth.
Okay. Well, part of Agenda 21 is also population control, and by population control, not just strictly numbers of people, which it does include that, but also where you put the people. And they are so intent on having complete control of the population in general of the world that they have, like, crammed us into little corridors and things, and they have it's just when I look at the clues, it looks as though – and then people have come right out and said, we've got to depopulate the world by at least 40%, and there are some that are advocating an 80% depopulation of the world. Now, how are you going to do that? Well, abortion is one of them. But for the life of me, I cannot see why they have to use – I mean, there's plenty of abortions going on now in, you know, the first trimester. Why are they in such a war against the later term babies? That's unfathomable to me. It's almost, it isn't almost, it is satanic is the only thing I can think of. But do you guys see a link between, you know, the population control people and Agenda 21 and abortion? Do you see that is one way that they are achieving their goals?
Bill, if you want to take that one first, I'll hop on after you.
Well, I'm not familiar again with Agenda 21. I was eagerly listening to what Cindy had to say. It was very educational to me, but to go much further than what she's said is I'm afraid I'd be just a little bit out of my ballpark.
I can hop in a little bit on the population control. I think you're seeing a lot of that. I just did an article on how, I forget which country it was offhand, in Africa, where USAID is trying to throw a lot of abortion drugs and also a lot of contraceptives at the population to try to control their size. And they say it's about, you know, helping women. They say it's about helping family size and helping the environment and all this other stuff. Do they want population control for the same reason as Margaret Sanger? I don't know. I think if you look, you know, it's mostly Catholics, Mormons, some evangelical Christians, and Muslims who are having the most number of children. whereas Europe is pretty much dying off, as are China and Japan. But I don't know if they're having too much success in trying to prevent or give more white people, get more white people on the planet. But if you talk about population control in terms of saving the environment, their alleged goal of saving the environment, I think that is certainly at least part of the goal. And obviously, the Earth can take a lot more than what we're putting through it, even though we all do need to do our part on that. I do think it's important, though, and I've told this movie, there's a lot of good talking, as we're having a pretty good discussion here, but what's the solution? If I may bring it back on to PBS, how do we take our knowledge and stop PBS? I mean, we're talking to each other is great, and on Twitter we do the
defund them in the House. Defund them. Refuse to allow any bill to go forward for spending, which must originate in the House, which includes any payments for PBS or the Corporation for Public Broadcasting whatsoever. That is a good start.
I agree with you. The question now is the politics of it. And I don't have a ton of Capitol Hill experience, per se, but I've lived and worked in D.C. for 6 years. I did work on the Hill for a year and a half. The problem is if you try to do that, they're going to say, well, look at defense spending. Look at the money we spend on corporate welfare. If you focus on that, that is going to be their argument. There was almost a shutdown in 2011 over funding for Planned Parenthood.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I would love to see Republicans, who are as corrupt as the Democrats, they just talk a little better on our issues. I would love to see them say, here's a comprehensive look at the budget, and we're going to cut defense, where all the inefficiencies in the defense budget. We're going to reform Medicare, Social Security, and taxes. We're going to hammer abortion funding. We're not going to allow
it's really
it
simple. You don't pass omnibus spending bills. In the House,
that's
you don't
sure.
send them a giant bill. You send them one single standalone bill that deals with one type of thing only, with no amendments outside of that thing. In Pennsylvania, our Constitution is very specific. You may only include in a bill riders and amendments that relate directly to the very core meaning of whatever that bill is. If it's an education bill, you can't put in something about transportation. If it's a transportation bill, you can't put in something about the environment.
Right.
It's about just that thing. Well, you don't need a rule in the House or the Senate to do this. You just simply need to pass a bill that says, this is what we're going to do for defense, or this is what we're going to do for health and welfare, whatever it is. And you give that to the Senate. Assuming Harry Reid or whoever's in charge of the Senate, hopefully somebody not Harry Reid in a few months, decides that they're going to actually allow debate and vote, they can put whatever they want on an amendment and send it back. You don't have to act on it. You don't have to go into conference and allow the cronies and the corporate lobbyists to change the bill and then everyone just votes it up or down. You simply say, no, we're going to send you back our original bill. It's called hardball. No more of this alleged bipartisanship. No more of this compromise. Look, I'm a reasonable guy. You ask anybody who knows me personally, I'm very easygoing about almost everything as far as the details of how and why any particular thing should be done, but I will not compromise on core principle. And one core principle is our constitutional guarantee of due process. We cannot murder. This is the biggest shame this country has. The left rightly brings up that this country has acted in some pretty bad ways towards the Native Americans, towards blacks during slavery. Of course, they forget how many people died to end slavery. They forget all these places that we've gone and left where we left democracy and we left them freedom, like South Korea and Germany and Japan. But the fact is we haven't been perfect. And nothing comes even close to the millions. What did the number James mentioned? 56 million innocents killed. There's nothing can compare to that. That must be ended. There is no room for compromise on that whatsoever. And I'm not saying that anybody who does this, that the women who made these choices are bad people. Most of them probably feel pretty damn bad. The ones I've talked to, the ones I'm aware of, don't. They're not happy with this choice. It's not a natural choice for a mother to make. I'm not saying that there can't be any sort of opportunity where you could have a little compassion and you could have a little mercy for the woman who might have made this choice, especially if she was raped or if there was incest or if she was very, very young. On the other hand, how can the left justify the fact that child molesters are bringing their 12-year-old victims who they got pregnant to abortion clinics for a no-questions-asked destruction of evidence and murder to boot? How can they possibly ask us to accept this and say we've got to compromise? I won't compromise on the First Amendment, the Second Amendment. I won't compromise on the Fourth and Fifth Amendment. We cannot murder people who did nothing, period. End of story.
Let me ask Dustin this. Dustin, do you see any other method besides political that we could use, or is there any other political way?
I mean, there's any number of things. I personally do a lot of engagement, you know, on Facebook, a little bit on Twitter, mostly through Facebook and individual conversations. A lot of my libertarian friends say, well, we don't want any laws against abortion, change the culture. And I think both are very important. A lot of stuff can be legal or illegal, but if you have a culture that's better, that's part of the problem. So I'm Catholic, and one thing we definitely need to change in this country is the acceptance of contraception, the acceptance of premarital sex, because those two things lead to the devaluing of sex, what it's about, and how it leads to an unborn child. That would be a very nice. Unfortunately, I question whether or not that can even happen. So there's... You know, the short answer to your question is we need to affect culture. And I think a lot of that is how we live our own lives. And I think a lot of that is understanding the reality surrounding abortion. You know, you go to the website, Just Facts, their president's a close personal friend and sometimes I do consulting for them. They do phenomenal work on the science of life. You will go to their website, you find that these babies are undoubtedly human beings at the moment of fertilization, unquestionably. Then you find
what's
the data
the website?
On how just
what's that
facts,
website?
Justfacts.com.
Justfacts.
Unquestionably, this baby is a life. Then you point out, and I did this for National Review Online, how ACOG, which is constantly cited by the American College of Gynecologists, which is constantly cited by the pro-abortionists, that's in favor of, you know, what ACOG says about abortion. Well, they're in bed with the Clinton administration. They're in bed with the pro-abortionists. They can't be relied upon. And all the heads of the pro-abortion groups, Merrill, Planned Parenthood, they don't know when life begins because it undercuts their argument. You find that data. You find the video of the abortionist, I think in Arkansas. I could be wrong. What state? New Mexico. Talked about how late-term abortion crushes a baby's skull, and you see liquid from the baby running out, and that way you know you've committed a proper abortion. Once you have all this lined up, you have an effective argument. I think that's one of the things that we have going for us. It's easy to say, look, this is a human life. Do you want to kill it? That's how we win, is by having essentially short talking points that are accurate and that are backed by facts and reality and empirical data. One thing I think the pro-life movement needs to do more of is getting out of the mainstream media. And we do a very good job of promoting each other and supporting each other. And partly it's the bias of mainstream media. But I think we need to get people out there who are good faces, in both literally and figuratively, to promote life. That's why it's great to see Lila Rose getting published or getting attention from Washington Post and other outlets. This needs to happen more, because otherwise it's Sally Cohns of the world getting published at CNN, who are just getting, just like PBS did with After Tiller, an unanswered outlet, an unanswered opportunity to speak to the average American. So that was a long answer to your short question.
No, it sometimes it takes a long answer. I understand that fully.
And I know there's
Cindy,
there's other folks who want to be able to get in, because unfortunately it's going to be a shorter night tonight, so we'll be able to do the extended period this evening. And I do apologize to the guest panelists and the audience for that tonight. I don't know what to say. Sorry about that. But yeah, we did have Jay Watts on, also from the Life Training Institute. So folks want to look back in the archives and listen to that, because we were talking about the abortion issue, that as well. But I do want to bring on Mark Prasik from the Patriot Journalist Network. Thank you very much, Mark, for calling to the show. And then I see Kelly on as well, and I'll bring you in next, Kelly. But first, thank you very much, Mark, for calling in. How are you?
Just fine, Robert. And I appreciate your courage in your initiative on this show, because we had a short conversation earlier, and really give you a lot of respect for that. I've got four things that are on my mind. One is just a personal testimony. Would abortion have been legal in 1959, I probably would not be here. Okay, I am adopted. My birth mother was single, and I was adopted at birth. And our daughter, we adopted, and we waited 8 years for that. So something to give thought. Abortion, first of all, just isn't necessary. Another topic that has been tossed around, I want to raise the issue of funding for PBS, because I agree wholeheartedly that the government should not be giving one dime of money to PBS, period, okay? But I want to raise a question. The reason we're talking about that is they're putting programming on there that we object to. I asked the question, what if PBS programming were 24/7 Newt Gingrich or a conservative message? Would you feel the same way?
Yes, okay.
Absolutely.
Well, and that's the question we need to ask ourselves. So why is it? That's a segue to my last point. My third point is Justin, I really, really, really applaud you for your comment, because we seem to have missed something, and we've missed something that is fundamental and foundational and is the center and circumference of the whole issue. God has a plan for marriage. God has a birth control plan. And when you take God's rules and toss them aside in favor of your own self-indulgence, well, there's going to be problems. And so passing laws and defunding PBS isn't the answer. It's a spiritual problem. We need a spiritual solution. So each of us need to impact the culture in our own testimony, in our own life, and in our own spreading of ideas. Okay? That's what we were told to do. You know, share the gospel. Because if you share the gospel, all these other problems take care of themselves. Okay? The last thing I just wanted to bring up, and I'll just leave it to some of your very articulate guests and panelists, it concerns me. One, I applaud the conversation that we're having, but I concur with Justin. We sit here and talk to each other. We object to the programming. We raise hell. We get angry, and we should. But I think that we have a burden for counter-programming, and we're not doing it. We're not doing it. We need to take our message forward and quit trying. Let's get off defense, and let's get on offense. And that's I'll just leave it at that. I just wanted to, you know, introduce some ideas, provocation, and I'd love to hear what everybody else thinks about it.
And we will hear what the other folks think about it, starting with one of our guests tonight, and that's you, Bill. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll jump in just a little bit. I'd like to quote something from an editorial I wrote here quite some time back.
Before Bill, hang on just a sec. Before you talk, Dustin has to leave, so I wanted to just make sure we said bye to Justin, and thank very much, Dustin, for coming
on.
Well,
definitely. Thank you for coming in, Dustin.
Thank you, Dustin.
Thanks for having me. It's been a very interesting conversation.
You're a thoughtful person. And,
to talk with you again.
Dustin, not only is your heart in the right place, but your mind's pretty darn sharp. I'm glad you're on our side.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Thanks again,
right,
Dustin.
Everybody.
And call in another time, buddy. We're here every Wednesday night, 10 o'clock.
Yes, ma'am. Take care, folks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Too.
Okay, Bill.
Bye-bye.
Bill, I'm sorry I interrupted you, hon.
All right, Cindy. Now, this is something that I just dug up here, going through the archives of some of the things I'd written before, and And I come up with a couple of stats that might prove interesting here, but referring back to something that that Justin had said, you know, in but to go on with that, you know, we've established in this country what they would like for us to consider as a new normal. In other words, what used to be normal is now either politically incorrect or unacceptable. And those of us that believe the normal and hold on to that, whether it be constitutionally or morally or by the standards that we one time as a country stood by, the people in power, I guess, at this time, and also going well back into the history of the politics thing, have found that if they redefine some words and do some things a little differently and call things that were once acceptable, unacceptable, and call also, you know, politically incorrect and so on and so forth, the education of the country's populace is well on the way of being corrupted by this modern mentality. And using the abortion issue as an example of the unacceptable new normal mindset, just look at these stats, which I have here, by who's been having the abortion, by religion. And women identifying themselves as Protestants obtained 34.4% of all abortions in the United States. Catholic women account for 31.3%. Jewish women account for 1.3%. This you may find a little bit surprising. Women with no religious affiliation, 23.7%, which is lower than Catholic or Protestant religion, by religion, and 18% of all abortions are performed on women who identify themselves as born again or evangelical. And these stats come from the Center for Bioethical Reform. So it's well written. So this whole abortion issue, as far as Obama is concerned, is nothing more, in my opinion, than the war on women declared war on women by the right. He ran as a uniter, not a divider, but this is, in one case here, I think, as far as abortion is concerned, is a true indication of what this person is capable of by dividing this country and the mindset of each one of us if the majority of this country and the nation population, about 60% is really opposed to late-term abortion. Not that many really opposed to early abortion, but 60% opposed to late-term. Now, if she was on the other foot, I got a real strong feeling Obama would be there too. But being that it is what it is, and he's found an ideal situation here where he can further divide the nation by means of changing different things and making the unacceptable acceptable and calling it politically incorrect, I think this is where he takes an active role in it. But other than that, the stats that I put out to you, as far as I've been able to find, are true according to the Center of Bioethical Reform.
Well, you know, and Bill, to me, for PBS to say, we're just bystanders. We're just opening up a platform for, you know, somebody to have a conversation and a discussion. First of all, it's not a discussion. They're shoving it down our throats. They're not talking about it at all. We're not getting our viewpoint in there. Second of all, the PBS page for POV, that's the political point of view.
Right.
Okay, that page has on it not only the trailer for the movie, but it also has a host for educators and organizers section. It has a link to host a premiere party, lesson plans for college, 11th grade through college, a discussion guide to go with anybody who wants to watch the movie, they download a reading list for you. Guess what's on that? There is a partner toolkit, and the toolkit, according to one of Dustin's articles, let me see if I can find it here, the toolkit includes like how to go about promoting, and you're going to get the video and a promotional materials and all that kind of stuff, ways to promote the movie and have your own, you know, whatever your group is.
Your
get-together. That tells me, when you look at all those things together, that tells me they're not just bystanders offering offering a discussion. They're actually promoting this. I mean, promoting it big time.
Absolutely.
So that's what distresses me a lot.
And the best of both sides, I do have Kelly on the line. I do want to bring Kelly. Here's how we'll do it. We'll bring Kelly in and then hear back from James to make any comments and bring it over to you, Dan. And then we'll go from there for the about 40 minutes that we have left before I have to unfortunately shut things down for the evening. But thank you very much, Kelly, for calling to the show. How are you?
Hey, excuse me. Good, just getting back from the fields, long day. I'm kind of stunned that, maybe I'm not. Just that promoting of such, what's the word should I say here, wickedness?
Yeah. Well, that's it.
You know, that's just kind of like, I'm a naive Iowa farm boy, okay, with a degree or two in engineering, and I just don't want to believe the world is so stinking evil. And I go into denial, but it hits me stark in the face over and over and over. And how do we educate those, like, for example, some of the beautiful black folk of America, how do we help them understand, look, the Democrats and Sanger, I don't think they're your friends. how do we get that message out instead of this fluffy foo-foo, FDR was wonderful, blah, 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 everyone's wonderful, and let's just love each other and kill babies. Like, you know, I don't know how they get this message across, but they keep doing it.
Yeah.
I don't know, I'm right now I'm out of comments because I'm still trying to figure out, oh, my gosh.
Well, you know, Kelly, there is an answer in brief. And the answer is we need to continue what we're doing, but we need that bully pulpit. There's got to be I'm not picking on this guy because he's a conservative icon, but a Ronald Reagan, or for that matter, a Bill Clinton, somebody with that level of charisma, that wonderful, authentic – look, their politics were different, but both of these guys genuinely loved people. And we're genuinely lovable. You don't have to agree with their politics or even know what was in the content of their heart to know that when they went into a room, the room lit up, everybody paid attention to them, they really enjoyed themselves, and people enjoyed being around them, they listened to them. We need people like that. They're out there. They've been on this show. They've been on other shows. We need to keep pushing these people because the alternative media, the new media, is coming up. And while we've been talking, I'm multitasking as always because I don't have enough time for anything. And I'm running through my 300 emails and all the stuff on the Facebook and the Twitter and the LinkedIn, all the rest of this stuff. And I'm noticing people, and I'm starting to think, gee, you know, they're really close to prominence. They're already prominent in this small area or in that geographical place or with this group. It really wouldn't take much of a sea change, a change in mindset of the overall American people who are looking for leadership. They're desperate for leadership. They really, really want someone to step up and tell them the truth and say, here's where we need to go, and have them go, yeah, that's true, and come with me. I'm going first. We need those people that are out there, and I think that's all we need is someone to go on those shows, you know, to go on MSNBC, to go on PBS, and stick it right to them. And by the way, if any of you ever get to go on any of those shows, if you go on Rachel Maddow or any of the rest of those, bring your own film crew, as insist that that's a condition of your appearing, and then print the unedited version or post it on YouTube so that people can see the edits that they'll put in. But it's only a matter of a short time now before people become prominent. Churchill, in 1938, couldn't get press. He'd write letters to the newspaper. This is a guy who had tremendous credibility over the years, had been there, done that, made mistakes, messed up, lived to tell about it, and nobody wanted to listen to anything he had to say. And then just a short time later, they were clamoring for every word that he had to say. They were hanging on those words because those words were what they needed to hear because they knew they were true. Churchill did not come up with any grand strategy that others in England and America hadn't come up with. There's a lot of people with the right ideas. But he had, just like some of the others that I've mentioned have had, that quality that allowed people to say, you know, I've never met this man, but he's my friend. He cares about me, and he wants me to do what's right. He's telling me what's right, and it makes sense. It feels right. Most of the people in America right now already completely distrust the mainstream media. They completely distrust just about everybody in authority right now, just about all of them. They are desperate for that person, and I hope it's not just one person. I hope it's an entire cadre. We can use thousands, tens of thousands of these leaders. But there's bound to be a few who come all the way up to that top level. And Obama, admittedly, does not have the charisma, but he sure fakes it real well. He really, really fakes it like any sociopath can.
Dan, this is Mark. Is my mic still open?
Yeah, hi, Mark.
Yeah, go ahead, Bill, and then I want to bring in James. I don't want to get James back in. Go ahead, Bill.
It's Mark.
Dan, I just I don't totally disagree with what you said.
Oh, go ahead, Mark.
You express it well. But I would caution against the attitude of waiting on some messiah. I think that we need to empower ourselves. We have social media. We are lacking in organization. And I think through that organization, the leadership will emerge. And I would just say it is a burden that we all have to become more civically, politically, and socially and culturally active. And I will remind you historically that Winston Churchill was promptly run out of town right after World War II. He was the right man at the right time. But Dan, I concur. You know, we don't have you know, a clear leader that's taking us in that direction. But I would say that we need to rather than wait on that person, we need to actively push the agenda, and God will raise up the leadership.
Oh, I'm in no way suggesting we wait for anything. We must attack on all fronts simultaneously.
Yeah.
Understood.
Hey, James, I want to go ahead and at this point bring you in, and then if Bill, you have any comments, and I want to bring Keller back in too. It looks like we have about we'll just see how it goes.
I'm going to be signing off for now, and we'll talk again soon. Thank you.
Okay.
Hey, Bill.
Thank you very much,
thanks for
Bill.
Calling.
We really appreciate it. And
Thank you, Bill.
To see you again on the show. And yeah, he had to take off. He did stay longer than what was in, I believe, anticipated. And we really appreciate it, Bill, for you staying on as long as we did. But I do want to hear back from you, James, and then bring Kelly back in, and then we'll go from there, James.
You're on mute, James. Well,
yes,
look, while he's coming on.
There he is.
Oh,
I hear him.
Yeah,
ahead,
I was on mute, actually. no, just what, you know, Mark was alluding earlier to some sort of a plan. And, you know, I would think that one thing that might be beneficial, and you know, I'm so short on time, and you probably already do this, so In fact, I'm pretty certain you do, but I don't know, maybe some of these groups that are activists on the conservative side of things, you know, that's one thing that I've noticed, and it's not just me that's noticed, it's also, you know, been studies done that show that conservatives are less active on social media of any sort, let alone, just a specific one.
Because we have a life.
Well, there's that too, yeah.
And jobs.
Know? Yeah, and but you know, but the thing is what I do like about Twitter is I mean, I hate using it on the phone, but I use it on the PC, not frequently enough. But I do when I do, it's on the PC because it's more comfortable for me. But I think if we could somehow get these groups to know about, like, the way you know, the methods that you use, Mark, that they could make a big difference out there in the social media world, and you know, just because that's where the change is going to start, is when you start changing the minds, and you start changing the minds with small suggestions. Well, Twitter with 140 characters, that's a pretty small suggestion.
Yeah, I think we could dedicate an entire show to what you just started, James, and I'm with you 100%. We're doing that. It's slow going. We certainly would like to be much further along, but I see it, and what you're saying I wholeheartedly agree with. But, again, I'd go back to my earlier points. We've got to counter-program. We've got to get off defense. The effect is the liberal left is setting the agenda on what we oppose. We need to proclaim what we want, what, you know, our vision. And this is where Ron Reagan was a master. He captured the imagination of the American people. And even those that politically didn't go along with his conservatism had a lot of respect for him. So I don't, like I say, we could dedicate an entire show to social media and political activism. And I'd love to.
Yeah, we should.
But that would be my message, is let's set our agenda and let's proclaim it and let's be for advancing our agenda and quit just reacting to what the left is doing. It's not working.
You know, I don't know if you guys remember this, but Mark, I think you might have even been on the show the night that I suggested this quite a while ago. We really do need a clearinghouse website so that we can get all these, I mean, there's hundreds of conservative activist groups out there, and they're all doing their own little things, and we're doing a lot of duplicating of the work. And we need to have a clearinghouse where we can get everybody together, and all of that, we can have a regular forum with a blog, and then we can have links for each organization, to where you can go and look at that organization's website. It'll be a link to their website, and you can go there and see what their plans are, what their calendar is, what they're scheduling, what they're doing. And then you can have a section, a button for education, where you can get on there, and everybody that has already done all this research can put that research on there. What works in your community? How were you successful to fight this issue or fight that issue? What did you do in your local county council, your local city council that changed things? How did you do it? What was your strategy? And what knowledge did you use to get there? All of that needs to be in one place so that we don't all have to be reinventing the wheel, and we can help each other out. And when news needs to travel fast, there can be a news button also that will tell you, hey, this action is now. We need action on this now. The Senate is bringing on the floor Senate bill, blah, blah, blah. We all need to melt down the lines, melt down the emails, and get it all out there. This is what's going on right now.
Well, Cindy, there are a lot of sites that do that. There are sites that do that right now.
I've never heard of them.
Well, the question is, the Heritage Foundation has the information. There are all kinds of Facebook pages where people share this information as well. On Twitter, I'm up 1,000 followers in the last week because I decided I'd spend some time with it. And there's all these activists out there who share this kind of stuff. And it's a question of the marketplace deciding which ones are going to be the big ones. Breitbart, he did a really, really good job before he made that one fatal error of who to dine with that last meal. And that continues. There are all these Breitbart warriors out there and all these new journalists who are reporting news, who are trying to find out what's going on in their local area. And it's what's happening locally. Just like the abortion issue is a microcosm and mirrors what's going on with ISIS or with the border crisis, just like PBS it mirrors what's going on with the rest of the mainstream media and a great part of the social media as well, each one of these groups, each one of these individuals that's putting the information out there about their local fight, the one thing that they're concentrating on, the lessons translate. They mirror evenly across the board. I spent earlier this evening at an action meeting with a bunch of local patriots. These are all my neighbors for my township, and we're fighting corruption. And all of us noticed, without me even having to point it out, that the fight we're fighting is exactly the same as the fight we're fighting against in all these different townships and boroughs and cities across America. And it's exactly the same fight as we're fighting the state capitals and in Washington, D.C. There is no one right way. Every single one of these ways can work. I think your idea of having a website that kind of brings all this together is a great one, and I think it's going to happen the way that free enterprise usually allows it to happen. The demand is there. There are people doing it. Some do it better than others. Some have better information, better contributors. They're just like on Blog Talk Radio, there are an awful lot of really good shows. And some are better than others, and the word starts to get out, and the listenership grows for the shows that do it better. So it's only a matter of time, Cindy, but if you know somebody who's willing to put a little bit of money behind that and somebody who has the computer skills to do that, I'm down.
Yeah, well, that's the
and
problem.
Kelly,
we have to get somebody that, you know.
And Cindy, I'd like to bring Kelly and see if there's any comments with him, and then bring it back to you, James, and if Mark has some comments. And unfortunately, folks, got about 20 minutes before or a few minutes after that before I have to start shutting things down for this evening. So go ahead, Kelly.
Well, you know, getting our message out, we use a lot of logic, facts, history, which sometimes are snoozers. I'm really good at putting people to sleep at night. In fact, call me at 2 in the morning. I'll read it from an engineering textbook, and I guarantee you'll fall asleep. All right.
You may be careful, Kelly. You may get that call from me tonight.
But the left, on the other hand, you know, they just have a distressed-looking woman holding a baby. It's the emotional plea, and that's kind of one of the reasons why I go to humor sometimes. And, you know, I've been thinking lately, maybe I should become a liberal. The far-left liberal of today, they have a lot to offer. Yes, free speech, oh, yeah, free speech, you know, and except unless you're a Christian or you're talking about the Second Amendment. But, yeah, free health care, oh, yeah, I can sign up for that. And, free, I could hang out, welfare. And then I have all this free time on my hands. Gee, I could become a community organizer where I would meet all sorts of nice other free-minded people who, you know, took money from others and this and that and didn't work for it. But they're community, they're helping people. And in this free thing, I would come into some free love. Oh, yes, wonderful free love from some girl I'd meet when I'm being a community organizer. We could have, well, we could make a baby and kill it. their thinking is just so, I'm trying to make a joke out of this whole, you know, but they do have some attractive features. Yeah.
Kelly, I always, enjoy your humor.
Well, thank
that's one
you.
Way to say it.
And James, let's go ahead and bring you back in here. We heard a little bit from you. If there's anything else you'd like to add, go ahead.
Well, I just, you know, I'm glad that your guest had pointed out that was on there, and we're asking for answers as to why, you know, because that's what people really, what they did, or is really what everybody needs to do. They need to get plugged back into their lives in some way, into making certain that, you know, our I don't know, I guess our life meets a certain standard, for lack of a better word. There's a thing called decency. And, you know, it's maybe not the same level for everybody, but I don't know. People need to find that decency that exists in all of us, because it really does. I believe it does. And start doing things, you know, that are for the better. There's what's going on with all that, you know, showing something like that. You know, and then this nation basically endorsing actions such as, you know, late, third trimester abortions. I mean, my gosh, and we're talking about, you know, it's not even a really. I mean, it's a life. That's the word for it. And to think that anybody in this nation would support, you know, doing something like that, except for an extreme, you know, in any circumstances is hard, but even in extreme circumstances where it may need to be done, you know, and the fact that it's just so, well, I think the phrase is, was it laissez-faire or whatever, c'est la vie, whatever, you know, I mean, there's a couple of them, I guess. And it's just, I think it should be something that's taken more seriously in this country. A decision that's not so just, I guess the word would be readily available. You know, if it wants, it has to be legal, that's fine, but it's not something that just, there ought to be this billion-dollar industry on, and that's just a shame that there are people actually making profit over the killing fields of the United States of America. And, you know, we can do something. You know, we can spread the word all sorts of different ways. You know, it's been quite some time. It's been quite some time since there were protests nationally of any measure that I'm aware of, anyway, outside of Planned Parenthood clinics across the nation. I know they just recently lost a lawsuit, so somebody was. But, you know, maybe somebody needs to shake that tree out there with the right people and, you know, get them busy again. And, you know, maybe get people thinking the right way a little bit. You know, that's what brought the conversation up again, was those people out there that were brave enough to do that. So let's do that again. People need to plug into their lives. It's real, you know, and it is what you make of it, so make it well.
Well, you know, James, another button that was on that website that I told you about, where it has for organizers and educators, one of the links you can go to is Take Action Around After Tiller. Okay? They're actually instructing you how to hold a discussion with friends, family, community members, and use the film's framework to fill in the blanks. After Tiller, we need what? After Tiller, we need empathy, information, understanding, dialogue. Brainstorm ways to implement these ideas in your community, or volunteer with support groups, organizations that are already taking action. You know, back when, I believe when George Bush was president, he had banned late-term abortions. So mm-hmm. I don't know why we have them now, other than Obama has just turned the other way and Holder has turned the other way. You know how they're just doing that for every other thing, too. There is no law up there in Washington anymore. As long as they don't like the law, they're not going to enforce it. So I'm assuming that, you know, people are just going into the, you know, doing whatever they want to do in those abortion clinics. So basically, if they're telling us get involved, they're telling these people here in the take action to get involved in legislative process. They're telling to have neighborhood and community members, I mean meetings, and check out the landscape section below and research the history of U.S. laws related to other aspects of reproductive rights. I mean, they're going right down to the details here, telling people how to fight to get their right to kill babies in the late term. And I just look at their vigor and their enthusiasm at trying to get the word out to kill babies, kill babies, kill babies, kill more of them, and do it all under the guise of understanding and empathy for those poor ladies and the very courageous doctors who are standing strong. There's only four of them left in the country because they fear for their lives because of those crazy, crazy mixed up Christians. So, you know, if we don't counter that by being just as enthusiastic, and just as vigorous in our opposition to it, we'll never have a choice. We've got to look at this. We need to show each other the truth in a video. Yeah, they're showing a video of all these ladies crying and having their little baby problems. We need to show videos of what actually goes on in a late-term abortion. We need to be passing that around. We've got this, you can't show that. It's too violent. It's offensive, and you certainly can't let teenagers see that. It'll warp their little minds and everything. And until we overcome that and start showing the truth of what abortion is all across the board, then we're not going to have a prayer of fighting against all of this. We've got to use the same actions that they're doing. You know, thought we had this one, and we find out
difference.
Here we are with it still.
One difference, Cindy, we can't lie. We can use all the same political tricks, the rhetorical tricks, the media
absolutely
tricks, but no lying. And there's
no,
one other thing as well.
Not. You don't
to amplify
need to.
On, well, no, we don't. And to amplify on what you said, because you're absolutely on the right track with this, no apologies, okay? The left is already going to say I'm a racist. They're all not the left. I'm sorry. I keep falling into this semantic trap. The statists, the ones who want to take over, the big liars, the not the honest liberals. I can deal with them. They're fine. I'm still a classical liberal. I have to tell you, I'm not just a conservative person in a lot of ways. I like freedom, liberty, and that's what liberal means. But the statists, they're going to call me a racist. And they're going to call James a terrorist, and they're going to call Kelly crazy, and they're going to call Cindy some other bad word, maybe even the C word. They can throw that around. We can't even begin to hint at a curse word, even if we're very upset. But they can do it with impunity, and they will. So here's my point is, if they're already going to call us these horrible things, well, I'm not saying suggesting we be these horrible things, but why be shy about it? I'm not shy about it. I run into people all the time of all different political backgrounds. Some of them are honest. Some of them are dishonest. Some of them are really, really convinced. A lot of them are less convinced than they think. But I'm not shy, and nor am I going to back down off an argument just because they get upset, just because they start getting angry. I mean, we don't come to blows or anything like that. Just because they say, well, that's not true, that's unfair, you're a racist, you know what? I'll smile at them, and I'll continue beating them with the truth in the most pleasant way I possibly can. Ronald Reagan keeps coming up in this conversation. People on this show can remember, some of us are old enough, that Ronald Reagan was called, well, he's a stupid man, and he's an idiot, and he's an old man, and he's so out of touch, and he's wrong about things, and he's obviously, he must be a racist, and he's going to lead us to World War III, and he won't do anything right. And Reagan just refused to be daunted by that and just kept coming out with a smile and insisted on doing two things, which was, number one, telling the truth, There you go again. Government is not the solution. Government's the problem. All those things that he said. But he also gave us a vision of the future that was better. Mourning again in America wasn't just a slogan. He would tell you in specific, and did in many speeches, what the programs he was promoting would do for America and why, and it made sense. Some were followed, and they did work. And this is what I've been working on for about the last 3 months on my spare time, and I suggest the rest of you out there start working on your own version of this, because what Cindy also said is true. We can't Mark. We can't just rely on a leader. It has to be grassroots. We all do have to think for ourselves. And who knows where that great idea is going to come from. It might come from that person who can step up and be another Reagan or something, or it might come from a person like the one I spoke to tonight. She's an adopted person, and she's struggling to have another child now herself, and she's a local who's fighting for non-corruption. She's fighting for liberty and accountability here in our local government. And she gets really shy when she gets up in front of an audience. She gets tongue-tied. She's tried every possible technique. She took speech in college, all that stuff. She just can't do it. But she can write, and she can think, and she's really, really got an inventive mind. She comes up with these really interesting takes that nobody else seems to have thought of, that we all go, wow, why didn't I think of that? That makes perfect sense, okay? We need to start thinking about our agenda. I'm already convinced we're going to win, and just winning isn't enough, because the moment after you win, you have to start pushing the agenda in the right direction. You can't just go, well, I won, now what? You have to be prepared for that. So I've been trying to come up with ideas, and I'm not saying they're all great. Hopefully some of them are okay, for what we would do with food stamps, what we would do with unemployment and welfare, what would we do with the military here at home and the military abroad and the veterans, what would we do with the border? And I don't just mean generalistic things that kind of mirror what the founders might have said. The general ideas are great, and I speak that way all the time. I'm trying to think of specific functional policy changes. What could be done, what should be done, what order they need to be done in. For instance, and I know a lot of people might have a problem with this, but I wouldn't cut one single social welfare program at all by a dollar until after we created jobs. Create a million jobs, you can kick a million people off the rolls. But you kick them off the rolls before their jobs, you're just guaranteeing misery and suffering that is unnecessary. That's just a for instance. You all have great ideas out there. What I'm suggesting you do is come up with some ideas, and maybe one that really grabs you. Test it out on your friends before you put it out there on social media sites and have everybody criticize it, because you know they will. Test it out with your friends. Look at it really, really hard. Take a week and just look at that one idea and try and work it up. And don't get too in love with that idea, because if it's adopted, it's going to be changed. You know that. And then start putting it out there to say, hey, we're not only against immigration that's not legal, we're not only against abortion, we're not only against disarming the American public, we're not only against the NSA spying on American people, et cetera, et cetera. Here's what we're for. Here's what we want to see happen. Here's what we want to do. If you can give that to the people, they'll have something to vote for. They'll have something to work for. And when we try it, it just might work. Most of the ideas we come up with aren't going to work the way we thought. There's always unintended consequences. But there is a really, really, really good chance that we can come up with ideas that can radically transform, that can change this country into something that it was always supposed to be, that we've never actually gotten to. But we can get there. And I'm convinced, and it's not just because I'm a natural optimist, I am convinced that if we do this in 5 to 7 years, less than 2 presidential terms, we can make this country more than the envy of the entire world. We can make us stronger and freer than we've ever been in the history of humanity. It can be done. It's been done before, and we have what it takes to do it.
And with that, Dan, I hate to say that I'll probably have to say these are some great closing comments, and then so I'll have to take a few from the rest who are on the line. starting with you, James, and then you, Kelly, and then we'll go with you, Mark, and then James, I mean Cindy, and then I'll have to close things out. So go ahead, Kelly. Or whoever I said was the first.
You mentioned James.
James, go ahead, James.
Okay, well, I just, you know, I'm just glad to see we've got, you know, yet some more people that are out there doing something positive in their community. And, you know, everybody should look at what they did and see if they can apply what they did in their own lives. You know, is what they did applicable? Is there some way you can look at what they did and apply it to what you're doing? To have a positive net result, you know, there's all these different ideas and all these different ways that people are, you know, standing up for the truth. And as long as you know, when you come across something new and different, you know, like what's happened here, look at it, see if it's something that you can use. If not, you know, put the idea, you know, in a back file somewhere, you know, or write you a note about it and save it. And, you know, there may come an instance in the future where what happened, you know, with this is applicable and you can use it for the betterment of everybody. And, you know, we should all just try to strive to do that, you know, to work for the betterment of not only ourselves, but, you know, that make sure our actions are positive to those around us. And, you know, the core of this issue is the show that was on PBS and the actions that were taken on it in that show were not a positive action taken towards other people. And I just don't see how people can even consider doing something like that. Well, I don't know. That's a tight subject with me there, Robert, so I'm good for the night.
Well, thank you very much, James, for coming on the show. We'll see you next week. And then we're going ahead and bring it to you, Kelly, and then Mark, and then Cindy, and then I'll close things out.
Well, Robert, I'm kind of scared because, well, I've convinced myself to go ahead and try to become a liberal.
Wonderful, didn't he?
Well, I figured out who my mentor should be, my idol, my icon. That would be Jesse Jackson. Yes, Jesse Jackson. He's got a lot of good things going for him. He motivates people to spread the ideology, spread the community activism, spread the wealth, spread the love, spread the legs.
You could make a lot of money, Kelly. He makes a lot of money shaking down big corporations.
Yeah. Oh, he does, yes. But it's amazing what he spreads around. And if I can spread the love and the legs, the only problem is some of Jesse Jackson's so-called followers actually don't believe in abortion. And if I followed in his footsteps with the spreading of the a lot of the kids would end up looking like, oh, they'd look like Jesse Jackson if I followed in his example.
Well, the Lord did say, be fruitful and multiply.
Anyway,
I'm going to bring it over.
Just to make this clear, there are guidelines to that.
Well, I want to tell something out that's really bizarre, okay? This is from a life observation of different sects that get some really amazing, stunning leaders, and they do some really weird things, and they have cult followings. Like Gandhi fathered a whole bunch of kids, a number of groups. There was always a weird sexual element to this. When they get out there in weirdness and away from God, they, you know, a whole bunch of fatherless kids, which I think is one of the greatest crimes anybody could commit.
It's power and the seduction of the devil. I mean, or evil, or just badness. People are corruptible. It's a big temptation. I'm sure George Washington the one of the tallest guys, one of the most best built. I mean, he was awesome. He looked great. He was an athlete. He was a war hero. He had his own uniform. He was the richest guy in the country, a successful general. And I am sure the ladies threw themselves at him. And
he restrained
one of the
himself.
Rare ones.
Notice that? He restrained himself.
He did. And it's to his credit, and that's why he's our best president ever, because he walked away from that stuff. He said no. But it's not. I'm not excusing these leaders, or like Clinton, from being tempted. I'm saying it's understandable, and we should not expect anybody to be another George Washington. If we get one, thank God for that. But I would be very surprised, which is why I don't want to see one supreme leader having power over everything, because whether it's sex or drugs or something else, or just plain power, they're gonna abuse it. They're gonna do the wrong thing.
Yeah, and with that, we'll bring it over to you, Mark, and then Cindy, and then I'll close things out for this evening. And go ahead, Mark.
Robert, I think that you made a very profound observation years ago. You know, that I feel a lot of energy and a lot of passion out there. I don't think that's our problem. In fact, it may be our problem. As a football coach, I don't say let's have a pep rally and then turn 11 people on the field and say go win the ball game. We design plays. We study the opposition. We have a playbook, and then we call the right plays, and we insist that they be executed. A lot of it gets down to organization and strategy. I also wanted to point out, to follow up on looking for the Messiah, I have read the resumes of the biblical leaders, and none of them had a good resume. I would not have hired a single one of them. And the phrase that comes to mind is, God doesn't call the equipped, he equips the called. And I also wanted to offer, I realize that you need to go out on time tonight, and I just want to let you know that I'll be praying for you tomorrow, and I will advise my wife that you are in a situation that you need prayer. And I wanted to offer,
no, I appreciate that.
If there's any of you that would like to continue, in spite of kind of closing up on time tonight, I'd be happy to make my facilities open when we close out here. If anybody wants to go over there, we can continue this conversation, but that's entirely up to you all.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. Give the link for them to go to patriotjournalist.com.
Yes, and look for the red meat. I'll put a link in the chat to go there directly, and then I'll go on over there now, and if anybody wants to drop in, we can literally continue this conversation as long as you all want to pursue it.
I think that's a great idea. Thank you very much, Mark, for coming in tonight, and I appreciate your prayers. I really do, and everyone else out there who's told me things both privately and here on the air. I really appreciate it. So we'll bring that over to you, Cindy, and then I will close things up for the evening. Thank you.
Thanks, Robert, and thanks for bearing with us. I know you got a big deal tomorrow, so thanks for bearing with us and allowing us to have this conversation. It's very important that we keep encouraging each other, because you can get depressed. You can start getting negative. There's a strategy that those in control who want to keep control use, and that is to keep our purses empty. I'm remembering back to just after Reconstruction, black families were made to pay double if they wanted to get their children educated. They had no right to an education. So black families would have to pay their government taxes. Plus, they would have to pay to start their own school so that their children could be educated. They were double taxed for education. A lot of us today are kind of being double taxed because our public schools are failing our children, and so we take them out and we send them to private school or we homeschool them. So we're sort of double taxed also because we cannot get a voucher. Government wants to keep its monopoly on education, and so they won't give us our vouchers. We're having to pay double also to protect our rights of the Constitution. Our Bill of Rights is we're going to have to spend money and time, and that is over and above. See, they're taxing us to death, and yet we've got to come up with money to fight them anyway, and they know that. And that's what all these ACLU lawsuits are about. They're trying to empty out our coffers so that we have nothing left to fight with. They have the power of taxation dollar behind them, these abortionization dollar behind them. Everybody that we're fighting, it seems like, the worst offenders that we have to fight in this battle to win our nation back, they seem to have lots of government help. We have nothing coming in from government other than a few meager handful of honest politicians who really care and are on the same page with us. So if we don't start, if we can't work hard and get our word out and come up with some money somehow, we won't win this. It does cost money to fight battles like this. And Robert, we thank you so much. I know that you spend your money to open this forum up for us every Wednesday night, and we thank you for that. And I know that Dan,
I
know
you guys coming on. It's a great contribution to the show.
And Dan's spending his money, and James is spending his money, and we're all, Mark and Kelly, everybody is spending a lot of their own money to try to fight this fight. I know that I spend a lot of money here in this county driving all around, going to different meetings and showing up at the polls and different stuff that I do where I work. And so it's necessary. And we've just got to keep it up, and we've got to keep up the fight because they're working really hard against us. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Cindy. And I appreciate everybody tonight. And we'll be back next Wednesday at 10 p.m. Eastern time. And I look forward to that. But until then, everyone, take care and have a good night. And I will end tonight as I do every evening, and that is with the song by Aubrey Ashburn. And, folks, you can hear more of her music by going to www.aubreyashburn.com. And definitely check out the Patriots Journalist Network and check out the Red Meat and continue the conversation. Take care, folks, and good night.
Night, Robert.